Welcome to the Investors Chronicle Alpha podcast. I'm James Norrington. I'm joined, as always, by Phil Oakley. How are you doing, Phil?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, James.
Excellent. Well, Phil, last couple of weeks, we've been a bit gloomy talking about the UK economy. I think I want to go straight into this week and start talking about one of the bright spots for the UK economy, a rare bastion of quality in the FTSE 100, the London Stock Exchange Group. I mean, this is a great business. It's got barriers to entry. It's highly profitable. Converts a lot of its cash to profits. Why is this such a great business?
And very simply, because it is a unique asset. It is, you know, it is the primary place to do business trading financial instruments in London and beyond. And you know, you can't replicate that very easily, if at all. And that kind of scarcity leads to dominance and incredibly strong competitive position. And, you know, these are the kind of businesses that I actually have quite mixed feelings about these days, because investors want businesses with strong competitive positioning, but You always worry that they can get too strong and that competition authorities and regulators will look at them and decide to take a chunk out of them. And I mean, London Stock Exchange is a good example of that. I mean, European regulators have had a good look at it. And other world regulators have had a good look at it over the last 12 months. And it seems to me that the company is coming out of it relatively unscathed. But no, it's just a unique asset. You know, if you were to invest in stock exchanges, data providers, they've proven to be fantastic investments because of the attractive characteristics that they have: limited competition, high profitability, and growth. What's not to like?
That's what's not to like, indeed. As I was talking about the LSE with a friend of mine who manages portfolios for wealthy clients, and said pretty much the same as you. It's just a great business. We mentioned regulators. More good news for the London Stock Exchange. We've spoken about acquisitions the last couple of weeks. London Stock Exchange, it looks like it's going to get the green light from European regulators for the Refinitiv deal, used to be known as Thomson Reuters. This is a great deal. Again, talking, it's data. The management ownership of data is highly valuable these days. A great part of the London Stock Exchange business is its FTSE index business anyway. So it's positioned itself well with financial data. And this deal, the Refinitiv deal, you've done the numbers in your Alpha report, and you think this one's going to pay back, you know, reasonably well, and it looks a great strategic move by the company.
Yeah, I mean, this deal transforms London Stock Exchange as a business. It adds a massive amount of revenue and profit and turns it into one of the leading global players in data. And we've seen this week that this market is consolidating with S&P buying IHS Market for $44 billion. And London Stock Exchange is picking up Refinitiv for $27 billion. And you combine this with the FTSE Russell business. You look at the fact that financial professionals, you know, they can't really do without this kind of data. You ask anybody who works in the city and Wall Street, you know, they need this kind of data. And you know, your choice really is, I mean, you have a few choices. I mean, Bloomberg is obviously very prominent. The old Thomson Reuters, as it was, which is part of Refinitiv now. And then you've got other players on, you know, S&P, which obviously we've used S&P and FactSet as well.
We've used all of them.
On the periphery. But, you know, this is now a consolidating market. So actually competition is reducing. that may not be a very good thing for customers. In fact, it won't be a good thing for customers. And I have a sort of, you know, before I came here, I worked for a company that obviously buys a lot of data. And, you know, the prices that these guys think they can charge each year are just eye-watering. The amount of pricing power that they have is incredible. And, you know, that's something that makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable, if the truth be told. But if I own this business, I quite like it, because the ability to make fantastic returns for your shareholders is just, well, it's just there in front of you. You know, this is a kind of business that can raise its prices most years, get sort of mid single digit to high single digit revenue growth. You leverage that and you get nice profit growth. And this is what the story of the LSE looks like it's about to become. And, you know, there's nothing yet in analyst forecasts to reflect this deal. But, you know, it will stack up. You know, I mean, any deal enhances earnings per share these days because of low interest rates. But it will, you know, it will make a reasonable return on money invested within, you know, probably within 3 years. And so it stacks up financially as well as strategically. And this is just a great business. And whilst it looks quite expensive at the moment on about 37 times earnings, it'll look better when Refinitiv numbers get put in.
I think, yeah, that upgrade, potential upgrade cycle that's not there at the moment, is good. It's a reassuringly expensive company with further to go. So moving on to another business that's very profitable, and we spoke a bit last week about platform businesses. AJ Bell had encouraging numbers, also some encouraging, not just their financials, but the growth, the demographic profile, a lot of younger investors coming to the platform, which bodes well to the future. Didn't perform so well. They had a bit of an IT glitch on the vaccine rally, which you know, I think that they were keen to address, and they do spend a lot on IT. But you know, this is another strong business, and another sort of the platforms we discussed. It is one area that the UK market is quite rich in. And AJ Bell, what do you like about them?
Two things, really. I mean, I think it's plugged into, well, it is. It's plugged into a very favourable long-term trend in that, you know, as a nation, we need to save more. We need to get more young people saving. More and more people are looking after their own savings and investments, and they want somewhere which is cheap, convenient, and reliable to do so. And the choice that people have is actually quite limited. I mean, there are quite a few platforms out there, but there are only probably three or four of them that have the sort of meaningful scale to invest and provide that ongoing customer service that can give people peace of mind at night. And, you know, and also, you know, offer the range of investments that people want to put in their SIPs and ISAs and dealing accounts. And the other thing, of course, is just the economics of platforms. You know, what you're dealing with here is a business which has got a lot of fixed costs in the form of IT, staff, marketing. And marketing is, you know, you have to do marketing in this kind of business. Otherwise, you know, you don't grow, or you don't keep hold of your customers. And once the profit contribution on revenue has covered those costs, you start making serious money very quickly after that. And, you know, you can see that in the figures. You know, the revenues are up 21%, the profits are up 29%, the margins are up from 35 and a bit to 38 and a bit percent. So you can see the operational leverage in there, and then you take into account that it's also investing in IT, in staff, and it's still growing its profits. So if you can get growth, and that's an interesting issue in itself, because if you look at the analyst forecasts and you look at the makeup of the profits that have just been reported, it looks like there's been a huge windfall in trading revenue since March. Private investors have been buying and selling shares and investments and funds with, you know, increasing size and regularity, and that has given a big boost to the likes of AJ Bell and come through into their profit line. That's probably going to be quite hard to replicate next year. You would think that the trading revenue would come off a bit. And given that most of that trading revenue is dropping to the bottom line in profit, it's interesting that the forecasts that I was looking at are suggesting that profits aren't really likely to grow at AJ Bell for the next couple of years. Having said that, this week they've come out and played around with their fees. They're scrapping exit fees, which is what they've been told to do, but they're also scrapping things like pension drawdown fees. But then they're getting it back with some quite hefty percentage increases in custody charges for ISAs, which are going up 40%, and SIPP custody fees, which are going 20% higher. And I imagine that will deliver some profit growth. If of course, customers don't desert, and I don't think customers will desert, because AJ Bell's fees are still pretty competitive.
Well, there's a lot of platforms, they do benefit from customer inertia. If they provide a good service, it tends to be quite sticky. And yeah, they do make their money from the assets under management that sit there, not just the churn from trading. So one area which has been controversial, and an area you've been critical of firms like Hargreaves Lansdown, which is even more expensive than AJ Bell, is the seemingly the quite unfair system of charging people more for custody of mutual funds like unit trusts and open-ended investment companies, OEICs, whereas if you're buying an investment trust or shares or an ETF, you're just paying the trading charge.
Yeah, I do feel very strongly about this. I feel that this is something that is grossly unfair to and discriminatory against customers. That, you know, I've had sort of conversations with people in the industry that I won't name, but it's even they sort of have acknowledged to me that, you know, that I'm barking up the right tree on this. And for me, it is, I just can't see how, if you actually look at what these companies are doing, they are distributors, they are custodians of investments. They're not really making anything or provide. They're an administrative and distributed service. And for me, I have not had anybody yet explain to me why it costs more to hold an OEIC, or what used to be known as a unit trust, on a platform compared with an individual share, an investment trust, or an exchange traded fund. And, you know, I did quite a lot of work on Hargreaves Lansdown on this, and it came out and said, you know, if you had £1 million pension fund and it was invested all in managed funds, you'd be paying £3,000 a year in platform charges to Hargreaves Lansdown. If you had it in ITs, ETFs and shares, you'd be paying £200. And this is a huge windfall to the platform providers. And it, you know, it's worth remembering that a few years ago, the payment of trail commission was outlawed. platform providers used to basically pocket about 75 basis points of fees from the fund manager. The typical management fee for a unit trust or an OEIC was about 1.5% a few years ago. The fund manager kept about 0.75 of that. 0.25 went to the platform provider for a platform fee. And 0.5 went to financial advisors. But the platforms actually ended up pocketing this 0.5 and a lot of it for advice that they never gave. And what they did was that they used that to cut the overall charges of fees to get people onto their platform and create like a virtuous circle of growth, you know, getting people on, buying the funds cheaper than anywhere else, getting more trail commission, and then getting the kickback. And that was all scrapped. And the last bits of trail commission, I think, ended in 2016. But a lot of the platform providers have done is they've replaced that commission with a platform fee. And it's 0.45 at Hargreaves Lansdown and 0.25 up to a cap at AJ Bell. And these costs are very significant for people with, you know, quite big portfolios. And, 60% or 57% to be exact of AJ Bell's revenue is coming from these ad valorem or percentage of value charges. And, you know, I think there's grounds for saying that, you know, both Hargreaves Lansdown, AJ Bell, and perhaps others are over-earning here. And I think for me, it's an issue that I feel so strongly about that I will not own an OEIC at all in my pension or my ISA. And you may say I'm cutting off my nose to spite my face, but I'm just not prepared to see that amount of money go to the platform provider for doing what I consider to be nothing for it. And, you know, if you actually look at the revenue margin, you know, which gives you an indication of how much money the platform provider is making. The revenue margin is the overall revenue as a percentage of the average assets under management. And AJ Bell is making about just under 24 basis points. And Hargreaves Lansdown is making 55 basis points. So you can see there in the margin that AJ Bell is a lot cheaper and is making a lot less out of the customer than Hargreaves Lansdown is. And that's reflected in the difference in their margins. But, you know, I think there's whether the competition authorities will ever look at this, I'm doubtful. But for me, it's a key thing to be aware of as a source of profit risk. And one that I think treats customers quite badly.
So moving on to profit risk, and another company that you've looked at that's been a real stalwart of your quality shares portfolio and your fantasy SIP, Avon Rubber. Now this is a company, a really good business that you like a lot. It makes products, protection gear for military and emergency services. And it's very few competitors. It's a great business, niche business. But you were very you didn't like its H2 revenue figures. The growth has ground to a halt. And even though this is a company that's made 104% total returns for your UK quality shares portfolio, you've taken the decision to take it out. So I just wanted to get your take a bit more on what's going on at Avon.
Yeah, I've come to the conclusion that for now, things are probably as good as they can get for Avon, and not just in terms of where the business is, but you know, in terms of what drives the share price. It is the business that I like. I actually continue to like it. You know, in terms of the products that it's making, the competitive positioning that it has, and the revenue visibility that it has excellent revenue visibility. And, you know, the last year we've seen a lot of contracts won, renewed. We've seen some very smart acquisitions that have made the business better, allowing it to offer a broader service to governments, basically. And we've also seen the quality of the business improve with the disposal of the milk business, and they got a good price for that. And investors have warmed to it and have put the shares on quite high valuation. But I think, you know, I had a good look at the figures that came out on Wednesday. And just as I was going through them, I just thought, not really that impressed. The figures were all right. You know, the profits were there. The profit margins were up. The profits were broadly in line or maybe even slightly better than what some analysts thought. But, you know, one of the key things that I pay attention to is it's all very well having, you know, these great characteristics of, you know, competitive position, profitability, revenue visibility, barriers to entry and that kind of thing. But you have to have growth, and the quality of growth for me is very important. And it seems to me that Avon now is largely going to be driven by acquisition growth rather than selling more from what it already has, organic growth. And there's been a sharp slowdown in organic growth throughout the last financial year. And let's remember, this is a business that hasn't really been touched by COVID. You know, it's not a business that has been badly affected. And, you know, the first half of the year, the military business was delivering organic sales growth of 10%. And we get to the full year, and, you know, organic growth for the year is virtually zero. And military revenues fell off by about 20%, just under 20% in the second half of the year. And then you start digging into, you know, the management, you know, what the management are sort of talking about. And, you look at the presentation slides, which you can look on the website, and they often give some quite good complementary information to the RNS statement. And there was a statement in there looking at the potential annual order intake, which obviously is a proxy for revenue, that this business could actually get. And you start looking at the figures and then you look it back and you think, well, hold on a minute. The best case scenario here of revenues is pretty much already reflected in analyst forecasts, you know, 2 or 3 years out. So I start to think, you know, where's the upside? Where's the upside for this share now? You know, the upside for this share, you need to attract new buyers into this share. And what attracts new buyers is either something's cheap or it has earnings momentum. And Avon Rubber has neither, as far as I can see. And I think it's had a good run. It's something that, you know, I may well look at again. I think it's a great business, but it's highly valued with a lot of good stuff priced in, and it just wouldn't surprise me if this business doesn't, if the share price doesn't begin to tread water or drift off over the next few months.
So a couple of points I noticed in your Alpha report where you go into more depth on Avon Rubber. You mentioned that you thought that some parts of the financial statements you thought were a bit messy. I just wanted to, as listeners are very interested in how you analyse these companies. You know, what you meant by that and what you saw that you thought could have been presented a bit better in those statements.
Well, I thought the exceptional charges, which is something that I look at a lot, the company's obviously made some acquisitions, and I looked at the costs, the sort of costs related with the acquisitions, and there was a cost of an accounting adjustment of inventory. And it just, you know, that's 17 million out of, you know, and you look at adjusted operating profits of 30 million, and you can say, okay, going forward, It doesn't matter, but you know, I thought that's £17 million that's flowing out of the business here, and it's just gives a sign that I didn't particularly like. I thought that was a quite high number. The other thing as well is that the cash flow was pretty poor. You know, the company has got a lot of cash coming in from selling the Interpools and Milkrite business, and there was just over £20 million payment into the pension fund, which obviously is a reduction of cash flow, which wasn't even mentioned by the company. And actually, the deficit went up. You know, despite this payment, the pension deficit is higher. I mean, it's not an unmanageable pension deficit, but I just thought, okay, maybe you could talk about one of the biggest numbers in the accounts. I always think that, you know, the company should mention something like that, and there was no discussion of it from what I could. Maybe I missed it, but I had a good look, and I couldn't see anything. And then the other thing, which I think is very interesting, and it's something that I've talked about in the past, is the tax rate. And people need to be wary of companies with low tax rates. Because it means that the chances are, if that tax rate rises, you can have a growing business with growing revenues and growing profits. If the tax rate is rising and the tax authorities are taking a bigger chunk of those profits, the shareholder can receive vastly reduced rates of growth and maybe not even any growth at all. And Avon's tax rate was 8% last year on an adjusted basis. And it's risen to 17% this year. And, you know, this is a business now that's buying two predominantly American businesses where tax rates are, you know, a lot higher. It's got a few things like the pension deficit, which can keep the tax rate down. But I just think that there's a chance that the tax rate could start to reverse out quite significantly over the next few years. Maybe it won't, but it's a risk that's there. And I think that if I'm from the position of someone coming at this company for the first time, and I'm looking at, you know, potentially buying shares in Avon Rubber, that's something that I think you should pay a lot of attention to.
So that a overseas tax rate of companies, overseas earners, dollar earners, is something investors should have a look at, because obviously, as we all know, the big macro focus this week is the drama that's going on with the Brexit negotiations, which I've been promising this as the last couple of weeks to have a talk, but there still hasn't been anything coming out, which obviously the Brexit negotiations aren't down to me, thankfully, where are we with that? And we're looking at the currency markets. I mean, I just briefly look now. The pound is down to €1.10 at the moment. We could see it dropping off to parity if they walk away in the next couple of days.
I don't know. I try not to second guess exchange rates, and the currency market. People do look to the currency markets as a sort of gauge as to what's going on, but you know, the night of June the 23rd, 2016 shows that, you know, that the currency market can get things wrong. I don't think anybody's surprised that this is going down to the wire. This is apparently quite normal for negotiations with the European Union. My gut feeling is that there is a desire to do a deal. And, you know, you read about what's going on, and I mean, who knows whether that's right, but from what I can feel is that the Germans want a deal, and usually what Germany wants, Germany gets. And I think that eventually that will come to pass, even if it is a kind of fudge. The French are obviously kicking up a stink, as are various other North Sea coastal states about fish. And, Mr. Macron may be preparing to do his General de Gaulle impression and say no. But I imagine that Mrs. Merkel will be on the phone to Mr. Macron and telling him to say oui. Who knows? Who knows? I mean, I think that you know, if a deal's not done, then there'll be something put in place to make sure that it isn't chaotic. I don't think there is. I mean, this is just my view, and what, you know, what do I know? But you asked me for my view, so I'll give it. And it's there is a recognition of both sides, it seems, of a need to trade and try and trade as well as they can. And I think that the economics will usually win the day. What that means for investors, I don't, I get I have the impression that some sort of new, you know, you see the, you're not really seeing much. It's difficult to read the currency markets because it's all relative. And if you look at the, you know, the pound euro over the last few weeks, it hasn't really gone anywhere. And the pound dollar is probably more of a sort of reflection of dollar weakness. If you look at the dollar index, you know, the dollar is, you know, probably at its lowest level for the last 2.5 years. So you can't really look into it like that. But I think there's potential short-term upside in the value of the pound. Not massive, but a bit. But you know, but long term, I still see the pound as a fundamentally weak currency. I see nothing that's going on at the moment to change that view.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, my personal view is I feel a bit. I take heart from the sort of the patterns of the actors making the protest. It all seems at the right time. You'd expect a French president to kick off. I mean, it almost seems that, you know, we do seem to be towards the end game. But that would just be my gut feel on it. But anyway, Phil, great to get your views on it, and hopefully, in the next couple of weeks, this will finally be put to bed. But in the meanwhile, you can read more of Phil's insights in his weekly Alpha report. Some more insights into the house builders as well this week, as well as some of the companies we've discussed. So it's well worth taking a look. And other than that, just wish everyone a good weekend. Thanks a lot, Phil, and compliments on the excellent French accent earlier.
Thanks, James.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.